Now's the time to make sure your immune system is as strong as it can be and to build your natural immunity. It's time to empower your immune system. Empower supercharges your immunity because it's made from AHCC, one of the most powerful mushroom extracts to ever come out of Japan. It's been shown to enhance your immune protection by over 300%, and it has the robust research to prove it. Empower is my first go-to when it comes to immune support. I personally take it daily and prescribe it to my patients in need of immune support. And who doesn't these days? If you're looking for a way to supercharge your immune system protection and build your natural immunity, Empower is the solution for you. For more information and to order, go to theharmonycompany.com. That's theharmonycompany.com. Or call 800-422-5518, 800-422-5518. Use coupon code HOFFMAN20 at checkout and get a 20% discount and free shipping. That's theharmonycompany.com for Empower. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking today about alpha-gal syndrome. It's the epidemic you never heard of, but today you're going to hear about it, or certainly if you listen to part one. Our guest today, Sharon Forsyth, who is the creator of the Alpha-Gal Syndrome Awareness Campaign. You can get information at alpha-gal information, right? That's the website, .com.org.
No dash, but otherwise, yes.
Okay, Alpha-Gal information. Great. And so, what's life for you like as an alpha-gal sufferer? You know, tell me what avoidances you have to undergo to minimize your exposure to alpha-gal.
Well, one of the good things about alpha-gal is that over time you tend to be less reactive. So my life is a little bit less limited now than it was when I was first diagnosed. Mm-hmm. But when I was first diagnosed, it was almost impossible for me to travel because anytime you eat in a restaurant, you almost always are exposed to alpha-gal via
inadvertently. Right. You don't have to order a steak to be exposed inadvertently.
If you think about a commercial kitchen, all the surfaces are covered with fat.
Uh-huh.
The pan with fat, the utensils are covered with fat. And that's not a problem for people with other allergies because their allergens aren't found in fat, but ours is in the fat.
Mm-hmm. So it's usually a protein is the vehicle for most allergies, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why, for example, fish oil is an example of this. Fish oil that's highly purified, even people with fish allergies, they might do okay on fish oil unless they're exceedingly allergic to fish. So it's you know, even if you are somewhat allergic to fish, you might give fish oil a try. That's an example of where the protein is eliminated. But it's in this case, it's the fat that adheres to a sugar molecule is the vehicle for bringing that into the body, and that can cause problems. Okay, got it now. All right, so now, and by the way, that brings up the question, does alpha-gal syndrome go away on its own accord? Do people, you know, just have to wait it out for a few years and, you know, then they can reacquire the ability to eat animal proteins?
So interestingly, alpha-gal syndrome does tend to wane, and often people go completely into remission. And this is probably because our gut bacteria produce alpha-gal, so we're constantly being exposed to it, and mm-hmm. we kind of have our own built-in
tolerance.
Oral therapy.
Like tolerance, yeah.
Yeah, it builds tolerance. But it's kind of dangerous to believe that you're cured, because often your remission ends suddenly and unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
So many of us will never go back to eating red meat.
Right.
We seem to be able to tolerate it. And another thing about alpha-gal is that the reactions are very variable. You could eat a steak every day for 10 months and then have a severe life-threatening reaction. And in fact, somebody in our community died under those very circumstances recently. They thought that they had recovered from alpha-gal, and they ate red meat for 10 months and then ate a taco and died as a result.
Goodness gracious. So this is not just a nuisance. This is a life-threatening syndrome potentially. So what's your daily routine like? You give us a typical breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What foods do you eat to minimize exposure to alpha-gal?
I avoid processed foods almost entirely because it's very difficult to check all of them to see whether they have things like vitamin D3, monoenzyme.
That's interesting. Vitamin D3 is from lanolin. That's important. Yeah. People are very into vitamin D3 as the preferred form of vitamin D. Do you take vitamin D? It's an important thing to take. Do you tolerate vitamin D2, which is from mushroom-derived vitamin D?
I actually take vegan D3 because
which is a mushroom derived D2, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And some fungi actually do express alpha gal, but I've never had a problem with the vegan D3. So I'm guessing whatever they use to produce it doesn't.
Wow.
So I don't eat processed food for the most part. When I do, I make sure it's vegan certified, not just vegan label. For breakfast, actually lately I've been just having a big bowl of lentil soup for breakfast. Eggs are fine. A mushroom spinach omelet, but nothing out of a package.
Right.
And
a typical lunch or dinner, what are you looking for? Is your protein source, main course, so on?
For lunch, I have salad, one of the safest foods for people with alpha gal.
Okay.
Someone's never contaminated. For supper, if I want to have a protein, that's kind of tricky. Mm-hmm. If I stick with vegan food, I'm fine. Okay. If I have fish, I almost always react to fish in a restaurant, or if it's not fish, if I buy fish that wasn't frozen, I will only buy fish from a producer directly after I talk to them and find out whether the fish was flash frozen on the ship or not, because it's so frequently treated, and I'm not even 100% sure what it's always treated with. Canned tuna, for example, it's processed with something. I don't know exactly what, but probably carrageenan. So there are only certain kinds of tuna that we can eat.
And poultry, a non-mammalian source of protein, but you say that sometimes that's treated as well. So are you able to find a chicken or turkey product that you can tolerate?
Yeah, sometimes. And again, cross-contamination is an issue there as well. So I'm just very careful to buy, organic chicken, make sure it hasn't been injected with either beef broth or carrageenan. There's actually a farm in North Carolina that raises emus.
Okay.
And you can eat emu, ostrich, and they also have a lot of duck products. And the owner has alpha-gal syndrome.
Oh.
So many of us buy our products from him because we know he's not going to cross-contaminate them.
Wow.
And emu and ostrich, I actually can't distinguish ostrich from beef.
And you have sources for these foods on your at AlphaGal information on your website.
Yeah, absolutely. For personal care products, I reacted to almost all my personal care products when I was first diagnosed. So we have a personal care products page. Now, not everybody who has AlphaGal is that sensitive. I just want to be interested to hear about that. But if you are, and if you aren't reacting to your personal care products, it doesn't make sense to go out and change all of them. But if you do react, we do provide that information. Vegan brands that people have recommended.
Go ahead.
They also have to, even if they're vegan, they could contain carrageenan. So for people that react to carrageenan, for that subset of the alpha-gal community.
So that would be, since you can't drink milk, that would be many of the so-called milk substitutes, like oat milk, almond milk. Sometimes these are made with carrageenan, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Or non-dairy ice creams, and why again is dairy a product? I mean, dairy is a mammalian product, but it's not meat. If it comes from a cow, it's going to have some traces. Is that the idea behind dairy avoidance?
Some fats and some proteins that mammals make are covered in alpha-gal, kind of like fur. And some of those proteins and and fats are in milk. Somebody's actually like looked at the different proteins and you know, tested them to figure out which ones actually seem to contain alpha-gal and which ones don't. You know, whey seems to be a bad one, for example. Hmm. Casein less so.
So that makes it more likely that hard cheeses would be less likely to cause a problem, but
if they don't contain rennet, yeah.
If they don't contain rennet, exactly, rennet, which is the starter, which is, I believe, from animal intestines.
Exactly. Wow. So some use bacterial rennet. And if you're dairy tolerant, you might be able to eat those, but not ones that are made with rennet.
Mm-hmm. And do you take supplements? And you have to be careful because a lot of them come in gel caps. Are you tolerating vitamins, minerals, and supplements in veggie caps?
Yeah, absolutely. If I buy vegan vitamins, I'm fine. And I actually get B12 shots because a lot of people with alpha-gal end up B12 deficient. And I was deficient enough that my doctor recommended the shots.
Right, as an alternative to eating meat. Right. So, okay. Are you disappointed at the slow rate of acceptance and awareness of this syndrome in the medical community?
At first, I was utterly shocked. And I was also really frustrated that some of my friends who are physicians seemed resistant. Mm-hmm. But I think once they start seeing studies where, you know, like where they looked at anaphylaxis, everybody who presented with anaphylaxis at a particular practice, and 33% of them turned out to have alpha-gal, which is more than all other food allergies combined, then they really start to see the light. And I think the new challenge within the medical community is getting them to accept that there's a GI variant where people who only have GI symptoms, and that this accounts for such a large percentage of people who, you know, and think they have IBS in areas where there's a lot of Lone-Star ticks.
So what's in your medical cabinet? Do you stock EpiPens? Do you have antihistamines present? Your EpiPens will save your life. Do the antihistamines minimize symptoms if you have symptoms?
Yeah, I think I have 9 medications related to alpha-gal syndrome in my emergency kit. EpiPens, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Benadryl, it's a very controversial drug, but I find it does help with hives.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Zyrtec. Zyrtec actually contains mammal-derived magnesium stearate, but I tolerate it. And actually, we don't take Benadryl. We take Unisom sleep melts because there's mammalian byproducts in Benadryl.
Mm-hmm. So you have to ask the pharmacist or read the – I mean, how do you find out if – the medication you're taking has, I mean, for example, the same problem happens with people who have celiac disease. Many medications have flour or starch as an ingredient, and the minute amounts of that can trigger their celiac. And similarly for you, it's animal byproducts that are in medication that can be a problem. How do you find out if there is any of that? Or do you have a listing? Do you provide a listing on your website?
So first of all, I think it's really important to emphasize that the riskiness of different medications varies enormously for people with alpha-gal. Some are absolutely contraindicated for everyone, and some are tolerated by the vast majority of us.
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to be sensitive to alpha-gal, then it's a very difficult, convoluted process because you could just pick any random medication your doctor recommended and start to research it. But then the chances that it will contain alpha-gal are pretty high. Mm-hmm. So normally what I recommend is for people who are very sensitive is get a recommendation from the alpha-gal community of something that they think is okay, or start with a liquid version of a medication, which is less likely to contain alpha-gal. Then you research it on the NIH website, DailyMed.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the ingredients. If nothing jumps out at you as containing alpha-gal, then we contact the manufacturer or else a drug information hotline. And then they can help you if the manufacturer won't talk to you, which is often the case.
Do you ever seek partnerships with compounding pharmacies? Because for people who are sensitive to certain food colorings and ingredients, and they need a medication, sometimes the alternative is to get it specially compounded with the precisely the drug without any additives or flavorings or different things that they use as vehicles for the drugs.
Absolutely. I have never had to have a drug compounded, but this is very common in the Afghan community. And the really unfortunate thing is that often the insurance companies won't cover it, even if there is not an alternative for them. And a case in which this commonly occurs is with thyroid medication. Now there actually are a couple of thyroid medications that are alpha-gal free. But for a long time, because the thyroid medications have to be really high in alpha-gal.
It's pig derived. It's for it comes from the meat industry. Armor thyroid is from from pig thyroids.
Correct. So even people who don't react to trace amounts of alpha-gal have often had problems with their thyroid medication and needed to have it compounded, and the insurance companies won't cover it. So sometimes they just go without.
Right. I think insulin would be another example of that, although now they have bioengineered insulin, which is purely the insulin protein, and it's no longer derived from animals. It used to be ground up pancreas, they would process into insulin. But now I think they can just bioengineer the insulin, so it should be less of a problem. Of course, insulin is, you can't dispense with that. But for people, it's a big community, and clearly, there's some people who have blood pressure problems. They have, various medical conditions that require constant medication, so they have to be careful. We cover the gamut. But when I asked the question about pervasiveness of this, and you answered it understandably by talking about how pervasive the sources of alpha-gal were. But what I was going for is how many people do you think have alpha-gal, and what percentage of people have been properly diagnosed? It may be just the tip of the iceberg, right?
Well, alpha-gal was first described in 2009. And I think that year there were 12 people who had been diagnosed.
So rare.
Yeah. Perceived to be rare. Number diagnosed was rare. And the number of people diagnosed has grown exponentially. And in 2019, I think it was 34,000 people in the United States had been diagnosed, which seems like a lot, but it's still, the tip of the iceberg in terms of the number of people that we estimate have alpha-gal. So we have data on the prevalence of alpha-gal sensitization in different parts of the country. And what that means is that those are the people who produce the allergic antibody to alpha-gal. And only a percentage of them actually have the clinical allergy. But we have numbers for all of that. So we can estimate that 3% of many populations have alpha-gal. 3% of much of Virginia, North Carolina, Missouri, the East Coast, probably the Hamptons there in New York.
So it's localized. So if you're from, let's pick a place, Hawaii, maybe it's less prevalent there than in New England or in the mid-Atlantic states.
Absolutely. If you're not being bitten by ticks and you don't have intestinal parasites, it's not very likely that you have alpha-gal.
What's the intestinal parasite connection?
Well, there's only preliminary data on this, but there's a South African study which suggests that roundworms can trigger alpha-gal syndrome. We've known for years that people with roundworms have much higher rates of sensitization to alpha-gal. They're producing that allergic antibody, but we actually didn't think that that was causing them to be symptomatic. So 79% of the population in Kenya, for example, that they looked at, tested positive for alpha-gal immunoglobulin E. But now this study actually suggests that it can trigger the syndrome.
But so you can test positive, but not necessarily have symptoms. You can be relatively asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic and test positive. So it's not something where, everybody should show up at their doctor's office and get screened for alpha-gal, because some people will have that IgE antibody, but it may make no difference clinically for them. Do I have that correct?
Absolutely. And some doctors are now ordering it along with a tick panel. Mm-hmm. And that's not appropriate at all, because actually the odds are that you will not have clinical allergy.
Okay.
Alpha-gal. So, you know, and the numbers vary a little for reasons I won't bore you with, but, you know, 1% to 8% of everybody tests positive for alpha-gal, depending on what the threshold is and what their diet is, will have, you know, full-fledged allergy as mm-hmm. defined as anaphylactic reactions to red meat.
So this is an orphan disease. You know, this month, the entire month of March is colorectal cancer awareness month because of the pervasiveness of this condition and how many people die of it. This is a relatively uncommon condition and a relatively new condition. Are adequate research dollars being allocated to this? And is there any effort to crowdfund or support research efforts?
This is a huge issue. I'm guessing you probably already know that tick-borne disease in general is grossly underfunded relative mm-hmm. to the amount of suffering associated with it and the number of people who suffer from tick-borne diseases. And then within the tick-borne disease pool, alpha-gal is kind of the orphan, and it's in part because our community has just been so newly identified, and there aren't that many people studying it, and we don't have a lobbying force. Like the Lyme community now is a pretty substantial lobbying force. So, yeah.
Also, there's no drug company impetus to do research because it's not like they've got a cure.
Absolutely. You're right about that.
The cure is a lifestyle.
In our community, we try to raise funds for alpha-gal research. Mm-hmm. You know, every year we raise, you know, several thousand dollars, but that's not going to, you know, it doesn't compensate for lack of federal funding.
Okay, so future casting, I mean, the good news is that this can be kept under control with lifestyle measures, you know, diet modification and avoidance of exposures to the skin potentially. But is there on the horizon a potential high-tech cure, some sort of monoclonal antibody? I'm just speculating here, that could block the alpha-gal reaction. Is that somewhere on the drawing boards?
Well, researchers are asking that question, and there are trials where they're looking at that. So omalizumab has been used pretty successfully in people with alpha-gal. That's Xolair, and that is a monoclonal
yes.
antibody.
Mm-hmm.
And
used a lot for asthma.
Yeah, and there's a researcher, one of the leading experts at University of North Carolina, Scott Cummins, who is looking at the possibility of an injection that would interrupt the process of the allergy developing, or after you're bitten by a tick,
mm-hmm.
Because it takes several weeks for you to actually, you know, start producing the IgE, typically 4 to 6 weeks at a minimum. Before you actually become allergic to red meat. So his idea is to intervene in that interval.
Hmm.
And then they're looking for a microbiome signature and considering the possibility of fecal transplants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the great things about alpha-gal is that you can actually observe the allergy developing, which you can't do for any other allergy because we can't tie it to a specific event, sensitization mm-hmm. to other allergens.
Mm-hmm. So obviously an object of research interest, which is good news for the growing alpha-gal community. And, you know, I really want to commend you as a patient advocate because you've done a deep dive on this. You're not a physician, but you're wading in deeply into the weeds with this complex subject, and you're very well informed. So give us once again, the information about where people can find out more about alpha-gal.
Absolutely. Our website is alpha-gal information. So alpha-gal information, all one word, strung together. Probably should have come up with something shorter.
Okay. That works. And I'm sure if you Google it, you'll get to the correct website. So thank you very much. And, you know, I look forward to hearing from you as progress is made in dealing with this. And I wish you good luck in your personal journey. It sounds like you're on the road to at least amelioration of this condition, if not full-fledged recovery. But you seem to have developed a coping strategy. So kudos to you for taking the initiative, especially when the resources for it were limited and you had to hunt them down, which is, I think, the essence of being a good advocate. So great stuff. I really appreciate you being on. That's Sharon Forsyth, who is creator of the Alpha-Gal Syndrome Awareness Campaign. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their health care professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands that I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.